Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I am not joined by anybody. We had yet another mix-up with a guest, though this guest, I promise, we are going to record on Monday, and we will have him ready for you guys for Tuesday's show. So for this one, I'll be riding solo. I'm recording this a little bit later than I would have normally, but here we are. Today's show, we've talked a lot about the big issues, the issues, the organizational concerns that predate those who are in power right now and who have been put in power over the last year or so, we'll say, right? Those who predate Magic, those who predate Luke, those who predate Rob Pelinka, all of these things that I'm going to be talking about today are things that existed before those who were hired and who I have concerns about the way that they're running the Lakers. I'm going to start, however, by talking about why I care so much about the way the Lakers and this Lakers front office specifically operate. So that's going to be segment one, and then segments two and three, I'll get into some of the... We're going to get into the Lakers history. We're going to get into the Buss family. I want to apologize to people about last night's show. I cut myself short before I really went in on a legitimate concern, and I'll go ahead and call myself a coward for doing that. I'm going to get into that tonight. We're going to get into the process that I've been talking about a lot, and then what I don't want to do here is just bitch for 20 minutes or so. So what I'm going to do at the end of the show is I'm going to talk about what comes next. How do these things get fixed, and how quickly might they be able to be fixed? So we have a ton to get to. I'm going to dive in right now, but I want to start, like I said, with what it is about this specific front office and the Lakers in general, why I'm so hard on them. And it's for two things. I've been getting called a fake Laker fan a lot lately. A lot. Whether it's in emails and iTunes reviews, on Reddit, on Twitter, whatever it might be, I've been called a fake Laker fan for as long as I've been criticizing Magic Johnson. And look, how good a fan I am or any of that, I don't really pride myself on that. But I want to let you guys know what the Lakers mean to me specifically before I get into like this front office specifically. The Lakers, to me, my dad was never really the best communicator. He and I, you know, it was pretty much business all the time, whether it was school stuff, sports stuff. I was a decent athlete when I was growing up. So the best moments of communication between my dad and I, or my dad and me, often came while talking about the Lakers. It's just something that has always mattered to me on that level, and it remains that way today. I mean, the fact that I get to make a living like this means that every time I see my dad and every time we watch a Lakers game, it helps me do my job better too, right? And so I have that familial tie, and I'm nowhere near alone in this. A lot of people out there, I would imagine just about everybody listening right now, would say that there is something about the Lakers that goes beyond just typical entertainment. And it's something, too, that, you know, a lot of times you take on, it's kind of like, it's kind of like when you see people who've owned a dog for a really long time and the person and the dog start kind of looking alike, you start to take on characteristics of the sports franchise that you really believe in and that you really root for, that you love. And for Laker fans, that means we don't settle, right? It means we don't, the idea of merely getting by or merely competing isn't enough. We try to be the best that we can possibly be, and we expect, we demand that of ourselves in just about everything that we do. Now, obviously, we fall short. That's impossible to be perfect, and I'm not expecting the Lakers to be perfect. But I identify, I take great pride in making sure that the things that I put out there are as good as they're going to be. And I take pride in the fact that Locked On Lakers is one of the most popular across the entire Locked On network. And it is in great credit. It's a great credit to the Lakers fan base, the Lakers brand, that you guys have helped vault the show up those charts. And, you know, I'm hugely thankful for that. And that's just something that, that it means a lot to me. I care deeply that something I believe in, something I've invested a ton of time in, I care that it's run properly. And with this front office especially, I was thinking today a lot about what it is, why this season has taken a toll that is not that I that, you know, the Dwight Mayer season didn't have this impact on me, that when the Lakers struggled through 5 years of trying to tank their way to a decent young core, that didn't get to me in the same way that this season is getting to me. And what it really comes down to is it's Magic. Magic Johnson isn't just a Lakers legend. He isn't just a LA sports hero. He's a legitimate, bona fide hero. He is somebody who, because of the AIDS research he has ignited and helped drive, has saved millions of lives out there. Just through the awareness of this guy battled HIV so publicly and so successfully to this point. My younger brother, I don't know if I've said this on the show before, but my younger brother is dealing with HIV. And so when I looked at Magic Johnson, when I see him not putting in the time that it takes to be successful in this job or in this as competitive an industry as the NBA is, as competitive an ecosystem as the NBA is, I just feel a little let down. It's kind of like, you know, you never want to meet your heroes, right? Because there's that off chance that they don't want to sign your hat, that they don't want to take a picture with you, that you catch them in a low moment where they just happen to be cussing out somebody, a waitress or a bartender, right? You don't want to be there for that moment. And this season has felt, to a certain extent, like those moments where I was hoping that Magic would step in and devote the time and energy that it takes to be successful. But based on the things that I've heard, the reports that I've heard, the whispers that I have heard personally from people that have knowledge of how things are going over there, he isn't. And it's a bummer. And it's why, you know, I just, it's a bummer to me because I want this guy to succeed so badly, and he isn't putting himself in the best situation to do so with the way that he is running things. And now, you know, the retort's going to be, well, he's a billionaire. He has his hands in all over the place, right? And it's impossible to expect him to devote as much time and energy as the typical president of basketball operations would. Well, okay, fine. Then don't allow hubris to get the better of you and make decisions that you aren't devoting enough time to make, right? The Mo Wagner pick stands out as the ultimate example of this, where he overrode the Lakers draft scouting department to select Wagner when they wanted Omari Spellman. And there were a couple names elsewhere as well that they were interested in. And you know, if you're going to do something like that, if you're going to throw that weight around and do something like that, well, you got to devote enough time to do that kind of thing. And but really, though, like, the point of this first segment is just to hammer home, I do love the Lakers. I really do. I do care deeply that they're successful. I care deeply that they're successful, not just for my own self, but because it would improve millions of lives out there if the team that they were rooting for happened to do things the right way and were successful in ways that we know that they're capable of being successful. That's why I'm so hard on them. I'm going to take a quick second here. When we come back, I'm going to get to the bottom of some of these concerns that I have. And then finally, in the last segment, like I said, we're going to see if we can buckle down and see if we can find the starting point from where these issues and these concerns can start to get fixed. All right, so we'll start here. The Lakers, as we all know, have enough championship rings and enough championship trophies to it should be enough, right? You would think, but it isn't. It isn't enough. You always want more. And so I want to talk about the trophies that they earned and what went into those trophies, what made them successful. And how that can be, how that might have set them up for bad habits, or on the other side of that coin is how, what could they learn from those successful moments and apply to where they're at currently, right? The first thing that I've been kind of juggling about in my head is a lot of the Lakers trophies, just like, you know, not to, to a much lesser extent than Boston, right? Because the Lakers had the three-peat and then they won back-to-back with Kobe and Powell. So they have five titles within the last 30 years, whereas like the Celtics have one, right? But what I want to look at, or one of the theories that I've been kind of, I wish I could stop thinking about, is that they did a lot of winning back when the league was a lot less competitive. For example, the acquisition of James Worthy, right, put in place the Stepien rule, and that made the league more competitive because owners were no longer allowed to just sell off draft picks no matter where they might be, right, in back-to-back years. And so for the Lakers, what I hope that isn't going on is that they allow that success that they had back in the day to blind them into thinking, or to trick them into thinking, well, that's all we need to do to be successful right now. The league right now is more competitive than it was back when they did all their winning under Jerry West. It's even more competitive than it was when they won the three-peat. It's even more competitive probably than when they went back-to-back under Kobe and Powell. The league right now is being infiltrated, or not infiltrated, that's not a great way to put it, but it's being injected with a bunch of different thinkers here who are elevating the way that the game is analyzed. This podcast in and of itself, and the others like it that are just as good, these podcasts, the type of conversation that we have about basketball right now is smarter than it was back 10, 15, 20, let alone 40, 50 years ago, right? And so what the Lakers need to do is they need to, as cute as it is and as proud as the Buss family and Jeannie might be in calling it a mom-and-pop type of organization or a family type of organization, you do need to inject some of that new forward thinking to catch up or keep up with those teams that are at the forefront of analytics, medical staffs, training, nutritionists, all those things. Like, the Lakers have to rethink the way that they're doing these things, and because they had as much success as they did back in the day, it's easy to fall into the trap of thinking, well, that was good enough then, it should be good enough now. But that's not how it works. See, how many retail shops out there thought, I ran 50 years like this, I'm going to continue to run 50 years like this, and ignore the internet. And then Amazon comes along, and you realize, crap, we're screwed, right? And you know, for some of those retail shops, some of those mom-and-pop retail places, they couldn't keep up with Amazon. They didn't have the resources to be able to do so. The Lakers don't have that excuse. They don't have the excuse of being able to say, well, we're doing the best with what we have given to us. No, man. You have endless resources. You print money. You can do better than you're doing right now. The other thing here is when you're talking about the history, is Jerry Buss is, in my opinion, I might be biased here, the greatest owner in the history of professional sports out here in America. I can't speak to owners elsewhere in the world when you're talking about football clubs and all of that. But out in terms of American owners, I don't think it gets better than Jerry Buss. And the problem is, when a voice like that, when a genius like that is now no longer a part of your organization because he passed on, that leaves a huge void. And as great as it would have been if Jim Buss could have stepped into those shoes and figured it out, or as hard as we're all pulling for Jeannie Buss to step in and figure that out, chances are it's not gonna play out that way. It's all about now trying to either figure out some combination of Buss siblings to maybe add up to what the Lakers lost in Dr. Jerry Buss, or the Buss family needs to be cognizant of the fact that they might not be able to add up and aggregate to Dr. Jerry Buss, and need to plug in those holes as an organization to figure that out, right? And look, I don't mean to say this as a knock against anybody, any one of the Buss siblings. I'm really not. Their dad was just that brilliant. And sometimes when you lose that type of brilliance, it takes a really long time to figure out what you have to do to start piecing together elements of that brilliance and maybe one day get back to that moment, find a voice like that, or find a collection of voices that fill that void. And the Lakers are very obviously still trying to figure that out. I'm going to take a quick second here, and I'm going to allow that to segue us into a conversation nobody probably wants to have, and one that I regret to tell you guys I stopped myself short of last night. I'm going to talk about the Buss family. So I have to be hugely careful here. The Buss family has the muscle to be able to take Lakers out of Locked On Lakers. So I'm not going to attack them personally. I want to keep this strictly about basketball and about running the Lakers organization. I want to start here. There just isn't a huge history, a long history of children of the brilliant leader stepping in and immediately filling those shoes, right? That's how Pete says it all the time. That's how monarchies fell all over the world. That's how democracy came about, was they realized, okay, if we keep electing people, there's a better chance that we will continue to have somebody at the forefront of our government, of our leadership, that belongs in that role. The idea of, what was it? I don't think it was divine intervention. It might be that. But the idea of back in the day in England, that they thought that God selected this single family to lead everybody, and that every single firstborn son and then the line of the hierarchy from that point on was just going to figure it out. Like, we saw that the results of that doesn't tend to work out all that well. Now, Jeannie is brand new to this role of not having Jim Buss there to be the shield that takes all the lightning rod that takes all the criticism, because he was hands on with the basketball side of things, right? Jeannie Buss is USC educated, and by all accounts is very smart when it comes to the business aspect of running the Los Angeles Lakers. She's also, by the way, one of, by all accounts, the sweetest people out there. She is. She's legitimately a really nice person. And so, you know, again, I'm not meaning to say anything like this that can be deemed as a personal shot at anybody involved here. I'm just talking about what the Buss family needs to figure out here, and so we'll look at Jim Buss first, right? Because he is no longer here, and some of the concerns that Jim Buss carried with him. He was not around basketball his entire life. He was away from the Lakers for a while, and then Dr. Jerry Buss pulled him back in and tried to teach him the ropes so that in the event that Dr. Jerry Buss had to step away, or when he had to do that, when he passed on, maybe Jim would be able to step in and hit the ground running. Jeannie was, again, like I said earlier, focused on the business side of things. So you had at the top of the Lakers hierarchy, of just in terms of the Buss family, you had two people who either pushed the basketball side away on purpose because she had to focus on the business side of things, or you had somebody who tried to learn the basketball business and maybe didn't succeed, right? If you go down the line here, you have somebody like Jesse Buss, who has been around basketball, who has been learning the Lakers organization from the ground up. He's now in that scouting department. He spends a lot of time with the South Bay Lakers. He is fully immersed in the basketball side of things. And so maybe what might need to happen, maybe not immediately, probably not while Magic Johnson is involved, because he was given the keys to the entire organization. But eventually, Jesse is going to step into a larger role with the organization, and if and when he does that, he'll be doing that as somebody who learned at a few more steps along the way than either being told focus on the business side of things, or as soon as you show up here, you're going to have maybe a little bit more too much power, right? And you know, I'm looking forward to the day that Jesse Buss gets a little bit more of that power. We've already seen what he and Ryan West are capable of. That might be, you know, the future of the Lakers if the Lakers are able to keep Ryan West around. So that's one thing with the Buss family that I'm really keeping an eye on it here. And look, like I said a second ago, Jim Buss is no longer around to take all of the criticism. Magic Johnson is probably going to take some criticism here if he strikes out this upcoming. He's definitely going to take some if he strikes out this summer. But he's already starting to get some of that criticism, as you can see by some of the response. It used to be if I brought up D'Angelo Russell, I was screamed off of the internet. It used to be if I criticized Magic Johnson even a little bit, I was screamed off the internet. But now we're seeing a lot more people kind of look at the way some of these things are going and saying, okay, yeah, maybe he could be doing a better job. I don't think it's arguable that he couldn't be doing a better job. So it'll be interesting to see, as Magic takes more criticism, as Rob Pelinka takes criticism, at what point people start to look at the person who hired those people. And what I want to talk about next is the process that went into hiring those people, because that, to me, is a lot more important than the mistakes that those people are making right now, right? Like, if it, the saying goes, basically, if I were to put a six-year-old behind the wheel of a car, I couldn't then blame the six-year-old for driving through my garage door because they forgot to open up the garage door before they backed the car out of the garage, right? Or, you know, whatever other accidents might happen while the six-year-old is behind the steering wheel of my car. The person to blame there is me. I'm the person who decided it'd be a good idea to put a six-year-old behind the wheel of a car. And I'm not saying that Magic Johnson is a six-year-old. I'm not saying that at all. He has been hugely successful elsewhere. But the process that went into hiring Magic Johnson, that went into hiring Rob Pelinka, that leaves a lot to be desired, right? It was basically Magic Johnson's hired as a consultant to the Lakers. And initially it was like, well, we probably know the direction this is going to go in. He worked as a consultant for a little while. Eventually Jim Buss was fired, and immediately, bang, there's Magic Johnson. He is hired as the president of basketball operations. After Magic was hired there, the process began where Rob Pelinka was going to focus on disassociating himself with all of his clients as an agent to be able to become a general manager. Once again, though, the process that went into hiring him was pretty much, all right, that's our guy, right? And look, there are some occasions where that process works, right? Pat Riley was pulled out of the commentating booth and put on the sideline, and it worked out. Sometimes that kind of iffy process pays off. But what you do is you there's a ton of risk, unnecessary risk even, that occurs or that you incur as soon as that becomes your process. You have no candidate pool, so there's no guarantee that you can confidently say you have the right guy for the job. Because you haven't really spoken to anybody else. And the other thing, too, is that the Lakers have been very insulated for a really long time. And the interviewing process works on two fronts. Obviously, you always hear it from the interviewee's side, where you take as many interviews as you possibly can so you can learn, obviously, until you get a job. But you also, there's a learning process that goes into interviewing and learning what various organizations are looking for. But the organization can benefit from running some of these interviews. They can pick the brains of somebody like a Sam Hinkie and ask him what went into the process, right? You can pick the brains of, like, if the Lakers opened up their GM search, you know how many candidates would happily just flock to the Lakers? It would be a dream job. And you then open yourself up to a ton of really intelligent people who all have ideas and directions that they want to take the team there. And you can learn a little bit more about the direction that you yourself want to take the team. But by not interviewing anybody at all and just going with Magic Johnson, you open yourself up to, well, the only vision that is in line for this team is Magic's. And what if Magic's vision for the Lakers is blurred, right? And what we're learning kind of sort of right now is that it was, right? This vision of, no, we're going to surround LeBron James with creators. This is the direction that we're going to take the team. Like, that was a bad decision. That was a bad vision. And I'm not here saying that was just Magic Johnson who came up with that idea. I'm sure he worked with LeBron and he and LeBron sat down and spoke at length about why that might work for the Lakers and LeBron moving forward in his career. But again, that's only two people here that are involved in that line of thinking. And had they spoken to more people, they might have realized, like, okay, even if LeBron is slowing down, you still need to surround him with enough spacing to be able to allow him to create for others. And let's say you want to keep around an extra creator or two. Okay, cool. You got Rajon Rondo. You got Brandon Ingram. You got Lonzo Ball. If you want maybe one more creator beyond that, great. But every other acquisition should be some people who can spread the floor, whether that's as a rim runner or as a pick and roll player who just rolls straight to the rim, or in the more traditional route of spacing the floor by way of 3-point shooting, right? And the Lakers didn't go in that route, and it was a mistake that they didn't. And it's hard for me to believe that if they had spoken to more people, or if Magic was maybe paired with a more experienced GM, that there might be a little bit more conversation about the direction that he takes the team. And, you know, that's the whole point here is you're not going to get everything right. Injuries happen. Chemistry issues arise. Any number of variables can pop up that you can't predict. But what you want to do with building a roster, with building an organization, is put yourself in the best situation you possibly can and maximize your margin for error. And, you know, because today I went on yet another rant about the Lakers. But when I was talking about that, a lot of people pointed to, well, before everybody started getting hurt, they were a 4 or 5 seed. Yes, you're right. But look at the people who got hurt. LeBron James is 34 years old. He's going to break down at some point. Rajon Rondo is 32, and even he has missed significant time over the course of his career. Lonzo Ball is in his second year and missed a good chunk of time last year and started this season on a minutes restriction because of yet another surgery, right? Like, these are injuries that JaVale McGee was another guy who either he's missed considerable time over the course of his career, or he hasn't played the type of minutes that the Lakers needed him to play as they were playing him at the beginning of the year. And he eventually, you know, now you can't predict pneumonia, but maybe he breaks down in another way, right? And so it's absolutely fair to bring up injuries, but one, every team deals with injuries. And two, the Lakers left themselves such a slim margin for error that if any of those injuries popped up, or if or when any of those injuries popped up, they were screwed. They didn't have any depth to make up for some of those losses. And that's where the Lakers kind of find themselves right now. So that's the Magic and Pelinka side of things. And what I want to focus on now is, all right, what next? What can be done here? Which steps can be taken to start to fix some of these things? And can those steps even be fixed right now? We've talked at length about Luke Walton and his coaching staff, so I'm not going to bring that up again. We've talked a little bit about the analytics department, and here's how I'll put that. If you have an analytics department that you're proud of, you brag about that organizationally. Right, you let it be known as often as you possibly can. Man, we are at the forefront of this aspect of this thing, and the Lakers love to brag about that stuff. But how often do you hear about the analytics department? If ever, it's in passing. Right, it's our stats guys are looking at this and that and the other, and this is what they showed us, and this is the direction that we took this or whatever. But it's not to the same extent of like. Like the Dodgers right now, it's borderline sickening how often we hear about their analytics guys, right? They are always investing all kinds of funds into new ways and new advantages that they can gain on in that aspect of the organization. And, you know, I'd like the Lakers to I want to learn so much about their analytics department that I eventually get sick of hearing about it. But right now, we don't hear anything. Same goes for their medical staff and their training staff and all those things, which, by the way, like, I don't know anything. I'm no doctor. I'm married one, but that doesn't give me any right whatsoever to talk about, you know, what job they could be doing better than they are currently. But again, let's look at the process that went into hiring them, right? Marco Nunez, who seems by all accounts to be a nice guy, right? But he stepped into the shoes that Gary Vitti left behind, right? And a lot of these promotions the jobs that were opened were filled from within. The trainer, Gunnar, I think it's Nielsen or whatever his name is. I'm blanking on it right now, but he was somebody who had experience or was known by Rob Pelinka, right? There wasn't much of a candidate search that went into finding either of those guys. And does that mean that they definitely are not the right person for the job? No, I don't know. I have no idea. But can I say for sure that I feel confident that the Lakers did enough to find that right guy? I can't. And that's the trend here. Right. So those are places where I would start. Those things, though, probably have to be fixed in the offseason. In terms of what can be done right now, not a whole lot, man. And that's why the Luke Walton thing is interesting, because on one hand, blaming him or making him any kind of scapegoat for all of the deficiencies that I've been laying out so far seems unfair. It's also kind of sort of what happens in the NBA and professional sports with coaches, right? Is that they tend to be the first hat to fall as things start to topple over. So it doesn't seem like they're going to fire him. There was yet another report that followed the one from about a week ago that the Lakers front office is standing behind Luke and that they are that he's going to remain as the Lakers coach moving forward. And you know what? I kind of sort of get it, right? I kind of sort of get it, because what the Lakers can't afford here is, so let's say I think Luke Walton's gone. This is based not only on gut or whatever, but just based on things that I have heard or based on the vibe that I get out of the situation, that it seems like Luke Walton is probably gone at the end of the year, basically regardless of how things go. Now, if he wins a championship and the Lakers go on some crazy playoff run, well, then the Lakers probably have to rethink things. But even on that note, right? Like it used to. I'll take Julius Randle for example. It looked at one point like Julius Randle was probably gone, or it seemed like Julius Randle was probably gone, no matter how last season played out, right? And then at the end of the season, that's kind of sort of how it played out. But Julius Randle had a really freaking good year, and Julius Randle looks to be a really valuable player right now. But it didn't matter, right? The Lakers kind of sort of made up their decision, and that's where they decided to go. And I kind of sort of get that same vibe here with Luke, and by all accounts, it looks like the replacement might be Jason Kidd. Which, like, yes, everybody is right to be nervous about how that might go. It's perfectly fair. I'm nervous too. One of his big tactics was bumping into a player so that he could get an extra timeout, which he didn't even get. It was a technical. They were able to read his lips, and he said, bump into me. And then they gave him a T. I think he got fined too. So it's fair to be skeptical there. But in terms of things that can be fixed right now, honestly, it's going to have to come from within. That's just flat out how it's going to have to go. Over the next 8-ish days, the Lakers are going to have to find themselves. They're going to have to come back from the All-Star break. And you know what? It sometimes plays out that way. But they're going to have their work cut out for them, and they're going to have to figure out some way to get past the deadline that was and that really crappy press conference or scrum that Magic gave, where he told everybody to stop babying everybody for the trade rumors and the impact that they might have on the team. Like, that probably didn't help at all, right? But still, the fact remains that if the Lakers want to accomplish their goals, it's going to take a huge turnaround when they get back from the All-Star break, and there just isn't very much that can be done right now to switch things up, right? The trade deadline is passed, so personnel-wise, they're kind of hamstrung. You can't find, like, yes, Jason Kidd, technically speaking, is available right now, but he would want to bring in his entire coaching staff, and that takes time. So you can't really do that mid-season either. So what the Lakers are left with here is it's gonna take some type of effort, some type of leadership from within, and they're gonna have to figure this out. And if they don't, well, then now you're open. Your options open up at the end of the summer or at the end of the season, because heads are going to roll if LeBron James doesn't make it to the playoffs in his first season as a Laker. Like, that would be, injuries be damned, that would be a freaking failure. It would. It just would. The especially when you consider that the bar for getting into the playoffs might be in the mid to low 40s, right, in terms of wins. Like, the Lakers should, in under those circumstances, even with the injuries that they've had to overcome, they should still be in position to be able to do that. Maybe they will, but for right now, they have their work cut out for them. And then come this summer, I hope that they get a little bit more experience, but not just Lakers experience, but NBA experience, guys who bring in different ideas from what the Lakers are dealing with or from where the Lakers come from, guys who push the boundaries on things that the Lakers could be doing a little bit differently or a little bit more efficiently, a little bit better, right? The Lakers have all these resources at their disposal. Freaking use them. And like I said, and I'll let this thing come full circle. It is just basketball. It is. That's fine. My wife and my in-laws and even my own family, my parents will tell me from time to time, it's just basketball. It's not worth getting heated as you get about it. But I care deeply about this team. I care deeply about this city, this entire community, and when I add to that the Lakers have helped make a dream come true to me, it just makes it all the more special all the more important that they figure these things out. And I think I want to believe, and I think they can. And I want to believe in Magic Johnson. He is a hero of mine. I want to continue to believe in my hero. and we'll see how these things go moving forward. That'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. This was at the very least therapeutic. I feel better now. I might go for a jog or something. But that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. When we come back tomorrow, Pete and I are going to light things up a little bit. We have so many days off between Lakers games. We have All-Star Weekend coming up. So we're going to send you guys off into the weekend with a little bit more fun. We're going to have some fun with All-Star content and all-time Lakers All-Star moments and dunk contest moments. Probably won't bring up Shannon Brown. But I promise we're going to send you guys off into the weekend with a little bit lighter conversation topics than we've been dealing with over the last week or so. Have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.